We have returned in an extended multiple part conversation with our featured guest, Bharat Roklin. He's written a book on palmistry, a comprehensive and reflective guide for the study and practice of palmistry, which we haven't even talked about yet. So
that's right.
It's down the line. This, I think, is a really important setup, because what I'm getting is, you know, these experiences that you had traveling in India. I mean, these were unifying cosmic consciousness and latent experience that you were having has allowed you at this point in time to hold all that energy and use the palm just as a tool.
Yes.
To have this transmission between somebody like myself who did it across from you, so that you can give them some guidance and advice
exactly.
about where they are. So, I didn't want to make the palmistry too mechanical without having you disclose who you are and where you've been. So we left off in our conversation with you just meeting with Papaji, relatively new, and I think we were saying it was about 1991, and you were talking about this feeling of enlightenment, and he said you'd be enlightened in 7 days, and you know, you weren't sure you were. About enlightenment, you said this. I want to go to this book, and we mentioned Paula Marvelli earlier, the Teachers of One, and some interviews she did, and I don't usually do this, but I was pretty intrigued by this statement. As someone like Papaji, who was living 100% in higher consciousness, everything that he did was enlightened. There's no such thing as enlightened behavior or unenlightened behavior. It cannot be. I would walk into Papaji's house and he would be glued to the TV watching cricket, which a lot of people would think is very unenlightened behavior. Or he would be chewing pan all day, which is an addictive substance, a drug. But I tell you, with Papaji, he'd be doing all this. He'd be reading the newspaper, watching the cricket, chewing his pan, and people would be sitting next to him and getting enlightened, having total satsang, total darshan with Papaji. That's when I saw that there's no such thing as enlightened or unenlightened behavior. It's consciousness, and it's not dented by any behavior.
Yes.
Very important, because I think we deny our natural state. Even the Buddha says we're, you know, our nature is Buddha nature. We just don't believe it and we cover it up. So expand on that. And after that 7 day period and your sense of having that, did you have a different attitude about who you were and being somewhat more enlightened after Papaji's darshan at that point?
Yeah, so I mean, what Papaji did was, first of all, he brought out again that what had happened to me with the sadhus in New Delhi. He brought out the the knowledge of God, of the divine presence, and then he encouraged one to declare, "Yes, I'm enlightened." He gave us the confidence to declare, yes, I am also part of God. I am also in oneness, this is what he did with many, many people, not only myself. Mm-hmm. First of all, he had very much powers with cities, what they call powers, to silence somebody's mind and to bring them into truth, what I call truth, into reality, which is something which is beyond the mind. And then he gave people the confidence to live it, to say, yes, I am divine oneness as well, you know. Which, in fact, even though I had had what had happened to me in 76 with the gurus, with the sadhus, when I arrived in Papaji's house, I couldn't believe that I could be enlightened. You know, like everybody else can be enlightened, but not Bharat, you know. It was like, and then because of my tendencies or my bad personality or that I got angry, or that I wasn't kind and compassionate, you know. And what Papaji did was just go, you know, break right through that, you know. Because he felt or feels, and I also feel that, you know, we are living in truth all the time. We're just dreaming that we're not. Mm-hmm. You know, and he was a great dispeller of the dream.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And of course, you spent a lot of time with him.
Yes.
He left his body, we said, maybe around 97.
Yes.
But he sent out a lot of emissaries.
Yes, to, what they call messengers.
Messengers, that was it. The messenger was supposed to deliver the message.
Yes.
Some of these messengers maybe got caught up in their I don't know what to say. I mean, I can't judge it. You were there. Well, I mean, there's still a lot of messengers around.
There's many people giving satsangs.
Many people giving
satsangs.
And
then, you know, there's been in the last, since somewhere in the early 90s or late 80s, there's been a tremendous rise in of what they call Advaita teachings in the West. Mm-hmm. And what's behind it is actually the fact that many, many, many people in the last 10, 15 years have been waking up.
Yeah.
And it's just something of what sign of the times. So something like this.
This is the good news.
That's very good news. Yeah. And therefore, there's been this tremendous interest and rise in Advaita teachings.
Yeah. Yeah. I know Gangaji is one of those.
Gangaji,
who
yes.
speaks very, you know, endearing of her master.
Yes.
I remember the very auspicious occasion. She was here when Papaji left his body.
Yes.
And doing satsang, and it was a hard time for a lot of people and a celebration at the same mm-hmm. time. And I wish I could remember the message that came through from him. But he had asked somebody on his dying bed about, you know, who's the Buddha?
Yeah. But that story is a very confused story. I went
clarify it for us.
I actually don't know that much about it, but there's some disagreement about actually what he meant when he was saying that. Whether he was, because it wasn't something really typical of Papaji to do. But he actually, there was one devotee that he used to call Buddha, and I think he was asking for this devotee.
Uh-huh.
But other people were thinking he was doing some great esoteric teaching when he was dying. But I don't know the reality of that moment when he died.
So we'll come back to you, personal experience. Yes. You were there. I mean, you were in India at the time.
Oh, well, funny enough, my mother died a month before Papaji died. So. And then there was very confusing reports about the state of health of Papaji. And then I heard that he had left his body and immediately left for India.
Uh-huh.
So I was there for I got there just before the cremation.
Yeah. How was that for you?
How was it? Well, it was... it was just the whole time, like the month before I lost my mother, and then then, which was very strong, and then Papaji, my master, and then also the place that I was living for the last 7 years was finished. I was having a house there and everything, so it was a tremendous upheaval at that time. Mm-hmm. You know,
so then what did you do? We're now in 97. You're back in India. Were you feeling a little bit lost in terms of your next journey? Where to turn? Where to go?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm floating around since that time. You know, Papaji.
Still.
Yes, Papaji burnt the bridges. There was no return back into anything. There was literally there was no return back to anything. He absolutely burnt the bridges.
Yeah.
And I've just been floating ever since.
Now. You know? One last thing about Papaji, and then I want to start on the palmistry, or the tarot also.
Yes.
But again, returning to this book, The Teachers of One by Paula Marvelli, you got into a discussion with her about peace. And she says, so the concept of being at peace in oneself doesn't mean a still mind, a still heart, no anger arising. It's nothing to do with that. And you say, absolutely nothing to do with that. And then she says, so all things are going on, but the reference point is peace. She asks you that question. And you say, not peace. Peace is not the right word. If you have peace, you have war. It's something else because you are in Brahman. It's like the center of your being is no longer in your body. I'm only talking about my own experience now, but it's like the center of my being is no longer in my body. I'm centered somewhere beyond that, which has an intrinsic bliss to it. The Brahman is in Satchit Ananda, which is existence, consciousness, bliss, which kind of takes me back to what you talked about, these states.
Yes.
And also the fact that one is going to move into these emotions related to the body, that doesn't change the fact that one is maybe centered enough in that place of
God. Like we're all centered in God, just to use words, in truth. And It took me many years to realize it, because at some point I was thinking, oh, if I'm angry, that means I'm not enlightened. And now I'm enlightened, now I'm not enlightened. And, now I have less anger. Like, you hear this a lot from people. Now I have less anger. I've been practicing for 20 years. I have less anger. Uh-huh. But the thing is, what I realize and what's coming as a teaching of Papaji is that you are that. You are truth. You are divineness. You are your divine being. Whether you're angry or you're not angry, it's very, it's irrelevant. Mm-hmm. And I know, even if I'm in immense suffering, I'm still truth. I'm still part of God, to use the words.
Yeah. Getting back to this idea, you said, well, if you're in peace, there's war. I mean, this is duality.
Duality, yes.
How would Papaji speak, or, even through yourself now, how would you speak about this, these times where we continue to see an escalation of violence and crime and this administration, certainly enjoying waging war, it seems, and certainly making some of the industrial, military, medical complex richer by it.
Yes,
what do you say about that?
Papaji would always just say, just to find your own self, to be with your own true self. Yeah. And, and he absolutely believed that this was a dream. Everything that we're experiencing right now, you're looking at me, I'm looking at you, I'm Bharat and you're Alan, this is all a dream. Mm-hmm. So this is a Advaita teachings. Mm-hmm. And these things go on. And in the long run, in the final wash, it actually doesn't really matter. But these, this is an issue that's been spoken about for centuries between the people, if this actually does make a difference.
Yeah, well, many have said that.
For example, a Gurdjieff did most of his main work with people like right in the middle of the Russian Revolution, mm-hmm. which was absolute chaos and mass hysteria to an 100th degree of what's going on in America now. And he did the best work with his best people. Ouspensky was during this time in midst of it. Mm-hmm. So it's also something we can't understand why it is like the way it is, but it is the way it is,
So all you can do is take responsible for your own presence.
For your own self, yes.
So let's just conclude with India. Papaji's gone. We were talking before, you didn't know where to go. You've spent, even since then, I mean, it's only recently that you've come back here and made a decision that you're now going to reside in the United States.
Yes.
And it's not time to go back to India, but you traveled to various other locations. You had this strong pull to Ramana.
Right, Ramana Maharshi.
Who was Papaji's guru.
It was Papaji's guru. Yes.
So were you...
Is Papaji's guru.
Yes, yes. It is not in body, but is. Yes. So
yes.
Any PS or closure to the last days in India for you?
No, I have nothing to say about that. Yeah. Because we have to get involved with a lot of it. Yeah. Wouldn't be so...
Not relevant to.
Yeah.
Only to say, though, I'm sure that, as you spoke, Ramana is still there, even though he left his body in 1950. And when you visit his ashram and you walk in his...
this place in Tamil Nadu in South India where Ramana lived all his life, he had a calling to go to this mountain named Arunachala, Mountain of Light, and he spent his whole life, this mountain was his guru.
Yeah.
And you go there and it's actually the fact, this mountain is a guru. Yeah. And it's very, very strong. And in this place, you can feel the presence of Ramana very strongly, and also the presence of Arunachala. And they say it's the oldest point in the universe.
But you are still carrying the presence with you, right? I mean, even though now you've left, you still...
I feel absolutely connected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. We are talking with Bharat Rachlin, and he is I don't know, should I say a wandering teacher of the Dharma, of presence of that. And he uses palmistry as a tool now. And I want to come back and we'll take one more break. And that's going to be the final segment here. We'll get into the book, Palmistry, A Comprehensive and Reflective Guide for the Study and Practice of Palmistry.